Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. Last week, in honor of Juneteenth, All of It took a deeper look at a number of underreported stories in U.S. history, and today we are looking at one from our neighbors to the north, Canada. Late last month, the news broke that the bodies of 215 children, including some as young as 3 years old, had been discovered in a mass grave on the grounds of a former Kamloops Indian residential school in British Columbia. It was especially resonant as the news was reported right around the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa massacre, where recently a mass grave was also discovered. Journalist Connie Walker has spent her career telling forgotten stories of Indigenous people in Canada. She hosted the award-winning podcast for the CBC, Missing and Murdered, and she most recently hosted Gimlet Spotify's podcast, Stolen: The Search for Jermaine, that highlighted the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women in Montana. Back in 2015, Connie covered the hearing for the final report of Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which sought to acknowledge and make amends for the abuse that Indigenous people suffered at these residential schools. Here are some of the survivors that she included in her audio story, Backstory, Canada's Residential School System.
What's happened historically is residential school took their identity away.
I remember the abuse, the slaps across the head. But I think the most pain I felt was the pain that I felt leaving my parents.
I couldn't at the time believe that in my country that such a thing happened.
A child at 7 years old shouldn't have gone through what I went through.
I'm pleased to welcome Connie Walker to the show. Connie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
How did you start covering the topic of residential schools?
You know, I'm a Cree woman from Saskatchewan. I grew up in my community, and I think that, you know, every Indigenous person in Canada, you know, has a personal connection to residential schools. So I remember, you know, learning about it a little bit as a kid just from family. It wasn't something that we were taught in schools, but I think that it really was, you know, in the 1980s and 90s, when residential school survivors started coming forward with stories of their experiences in these schools and the abuse that they endured. And they started actually, you know, sharing their stories, but also headed to court and started taking the government and the churches to court. And I feel like that was kind of the beginning of the awakening, which is still happening today.
Let me get the who, what, where, when, and why of residential schools. Mm-hmm. What were the purpose of them? Who ran them? Why were they created?
Sure. I mean, residential schools, I think, were part of the Government of Canada's, you know, policy to deal with Indigenous people, which they felt assimilation was the best way. You know, for over 100 years, these residential schools were in existence, and the goal was, in short, to assimilate Indigenous kids, to separate them from their families, from their communities, from each other, and force them to attend these schools for at least 10 months of the year. So, as you said, you know, children as young as 3, 4, 5, 6 years old were forcibly removed from their parents, often with the aid of the RCMP, and made to attend these schools and not be able to speak their language, to practice their culture. A lot of these schools were run by the churches and were very strict. So children were taught that being Indigenous and being Native was wrong, was bad. And they, you know, as we've discovered and, you know, from survivors coming forward and sharing their stories, was that they, along with, you know, this assimilation policy, they also experienced malnourishment in schools. There, you know, there were substandard conditions in these schools. They were overcrowded. There was a lot of disease that was rampant, and a lot of physical and sexual abuse. And these schools went on for, like I said, over 100 years. So generations of Indigenous kids, you know, over 150,000 students attended these schools. And I think a lot of people might think that this is kind of this ancient history that, you know, you see the footage of the children and black and white, you know, who are at these schools. But the last school closed in Canada in 1996. So this is something that, you know, it's in some ways shocking that we're just talking about it now in 2021 when it was happening for so long, but also not that long ago.
You mentioned abuse and malnutrition. Were these schools regulated by any agency?
Well, they were run by the Government of Canada. They were funded by the Government of Canada and often run by the churches. And so, you know, there was some reporting, there was some record keeping. There were some people who raised the alarm or tried to raise the alarm about the number of deaths that they were seeing in the schools because of disease, because of malnourishment, because of other things. But I think that you know, for the most part, you know, this is something that was largely ignored for a really long time in Canada. You know, there are so many stories of Indigenous kids who tried to run away from these residential schools, who tried to make it back home, children who died trying to escape, children who were caught and forced to go back. You know, and I think that there, while there was, you know, obviously some government oversight and the work of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, you know, they were able to gain access to a lot of the documents so that we have some information, but I think a lot of it is still unknown and still lost. But definitely, I think that there's more reporting that needs to be done about the impacts of residential schools.
This is Connie Walker, the journalist, and we are talking about Canada's residential schools. I want to get to this news of this really horrific news of the last month. How was the discovery about the mass grave at Kamloops made? And what was it particularly about this school?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, as horrifying as this news is, the mass grave of approximately 215 Indigenous children as young as 3 years old being found in this mass grave. The reality is that deaths at schools, at these residential schools, was well known, and it was common and expected. You know, these schools were designed with graveyards. You know, there was some reporting that was done when these schools were in operation that found, you know, in some classes, in some schools, like up to 50% of kids might die. And, you know, the odds of dying in a residential school were actually greater than a Canadian soldier who fought in World War II. You know, so I think that the reality is that there has been, you know, an understanding that a lot of children died. But what we don't know is how many, really. You know, you mentioned the work of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Mm-hmm. And that was a commission that was set up in Canada to really learn and uncover the truth about residential schools, the truth about what survivors experienced, the truth about what these children went through when they were separated from their parents for most of the years. Some children actually never went home. I did a story researching this Cree woman from Saskatchewan and her family and the intergenerational effects of residential school. And we found her residential school records that showed that she was listed as in attendance throughout the year. So she attended when she was 7 years old and never got to go home, never got to see her parents and family again. So I think that, you know, there has been an understanding, but what we really, you know, the work of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission has been trying to do, or was try to document the number of kids who died. And, you know, when they finished their final report, which was about 6 years ago, I think that they, you know, at that time they said as many as 15,000 kids died. But the truth is that we may never know. And although Kamloops and the horrifying news about this discovery of a mass grave is I think shocked so many Canadians and Americans and people around the world, the truth is that there were residential schools across the country and that there are already discoveries being made about other graves at these schools across Canada.
As a result of that Truth and Reconciliation Commission in 2015, there were action items suggested by the commission. How has the implementation worked over the past 6 years? Has anything been done that was supposed to be done?
Yeah, I mean, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, you know, so it's so interesting to kind of, I think, understand how they came up with these calls to action in the first place. You know, their mandate was to uncover the truth about residential schools, but also to hear directly from survivors. So they traveled across the country for years, holding events and gathering testimony from survivors about these experiences. And they also learned about the intergenerational effects of residential schools and how the trauma that residential school survivors experience as children is continuing to impact families and communities today. And it was with those intergenerational survivors and in kind of taking a look at the legacies of residential school that they came up with these calls to action. And there are 94 calls to action, you know, focusing on a number of different issues like child welfare, language, culture, reconciliation, health. And I think that there is a lot of criticism about the progress that's been made since they released these calls to action, or the lack of progress, perhaps, which, I think that maybe in the United States especially, people might find that surprising, given that our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, when he entered office, he said that his government's most important relationship was with Indigenous people. And, you know, he made a lot of, very big commitments to implement these calls to action, to improve access to clean drinking water on reservations, because there are a number of communities, First Nations communities in Canada, that don't have access to clean drinking water, to address this crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And I think that what's happened in Canada, I've been a journalist for about 20 years, and there has been this huge shift, I think, in the last 5 to 10 years in terms of just, a growing awareness and attention on Indigenous issues. But I think that along with that, there comes greater scrutiny for governments about the lack of progress or progress that has been made. And certainly, finding missing children in residential schools is one of those action items that people are now demanding action on.
Prior to Trudeau, Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper made a formal apology to Native American communities in Canada. Let's take a listen to that.
The absence of an apology has been an impediment to healing and reconciliation. Therefore, on behalf of the Government of Canada and all Canadians, I stand before you in this chamber so vital, so central to our existence as a country, to apologize to Aboriginal peoples for the role the Government of Canada played in the Indian residential schools system. To the approximately 80,000 living former students and all family members and communities, the Government of Canada now recognizes that it was wrong to forcibly remove children from their homes, and we apologize for having done this.
What impact did that apology have?
Yeah, I think it's really important to understand what led to that apology. Actually, I think that it certainly had an impact. I think that kind of acknowledgement by the Government of Canada had an impact for sure in Indigenous communities and within the broader Canadian conversations around Indigenous issues. But I think it's also really important to understand what led to that apology. So, when survivors started coming forward and taking the government and churches to court, and suing them because of the abuse that they experienced in residential schools, they started being awarded very large settlements. Mm-hmm. And it was after a number of survivors came forward and won these large settlements that the government, and Indigenous organizations came together to form this Indian Residential School Settlement. And that kind of paved the way for the apology, but also the creation of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And I think that, as important, obviously, as that acknowledgement was, back in 2008, I think it was, I think it's also incredibly, on one hand, maybe frustrating, I think, for survivors to be here in 2021 and still have, people learning about residential schools in Canada. This is something that until very recently, it was not taught in schools, that people did not understand the intergenerational effects of residential schools or the truth, really, mm-hmm. about this shared history that we have and the Indigenous side of this history. And so, it's better late than ever that there's been this awareness and this reckoning, but there's certainly so many more truths to tell and stories that we need to shed light on.
Connie Walker is a journalist and podcast host. Connie, thank you so much for sharing your reporting about Canada's residential schools.
I'm happy to. Thank you so much for having me, and thanks for making space for this conversation. I appreciate it.